Thanks, God. So this is Noreen from Beyond Potential. Live life your way. And we are here. We are live. And I am happy to be here this week. My week has been incredibly... my week has been really good. Last week, I had the opportunity to spend a half a day at Facebook. Facebook is humongous. 190,000 square feet down on... You need to come into the camera. 190,000 square feet on Fifth Avenue and... was it Fifth Avenue and 17th Street over there? And I learned some really great things. So if you're a Facebook friend of mine or an Instagram friend of mine, you're going to see a lot of like activities going on in my Facebook because I learned some new skills and I'm really excited about it. But like social media is not my thing. It's not my bag and I am not going to spend my time doing it. So I think my story is that, and my theory is that, let the professionals do what the professionals do. You do what you do and let the professionals do what they do. So I will not be doing that. So anyway, tonight I have a wonderful guest on my show. He is the author of, whoopsie daisy, don't want to drive myself crazy there. He is the author of The More You Do, The Better You Feel, Oh, How to Overcome Procrastination and Live a Happier Life. And his name is David Parker. So hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Noreen. How are you?
I am great. I got to get over a bit more so that I'm in the screen and
let's
not out of the screen.
Let's share the screen.
Yes. So tell us a little bit. So
thanks
welcome
for,
to the
thank
show.
Thank you for having me here. Yeah, we I met, really appreciate it. Can we show the cover of the book for
sure.
a second?
We're going to do
That'd
that.
Be great.
We're going to do that in a minute.
Okay.
Don't direct my show.
Oh, okay. You got it.
So we met at Smart Hustle.
That's right.
That was early November. Yeah. So we met at Smart Hustle in November. November, I met a lot of people.
Right.
From going to that event. That was a really great event.
Yeah.
Do you actually know Ramon?
Yeah. Ramon, yeah.
You actually know him?
Yes.
Great.
I've known him for a couple of years.
That was really...
I think that was the second time or the third time I've been at his.
I think that was the third time.
That was the third time.
I met some really great people at Smart Hustle. Some people that I will definitely keep in contact
Some with. High energy people.
I have had actually three people on the show.
All right.
Yeah. So
cool.
you're actually the third person on the show.
Cool.
So
third is the charm, right?
So this is David's book, The More You Do, The Better You Feel.
That's right.
Right?
Thank you.
And it's I would say it's about procrastination
and
depression.
That's right.
So my question is usually, what comes first, the chicken or the egg?
That's right. Yeah.
Does the depression come first?
I get asked that a lot,
Or does the procrastination come, or is it procrastination that brings on depression?
You know what the answer is? The answer is, who knows? You know, the answer is that for me, for myself, and for a lot of the people who've read my book, procrastination and depression are a downward spiral. They're like locked together. And it's like one day you're procrastinating and the next day you feel like garbage.
Right.
And then when you feel like garbage, if you, I'm not a doctor, by the way, I should
just put that out.
That
as a
I'm not an
He's
MD.
Not a doctor.
This book is
he
written
is not
from
a psychologist.
First-hand
he is not
experience.
A therapist. This is his personal opinion.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I will say this. You know, I have I have medical opinions in the book. You know, positive things written about it by professionals.
Mm-hmm.
And the first one there from a doctor who said it's better to learn from someone who's lived the experience than from someone who's studied the experience.
Okay.
I found that procrastination with me, like I suffered all my life with depression.
Well, I'm gonna rein you in a little bit.
Right.
And I'm gonna ask you to tell us a little bit about you.
Right.
Who you are, where you come from.
Right.
And what was you know, just a little bit about you.
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York.
Where in Brooklyn?
I grew up in Flatbush, in the heart of Flatbush.
Okay.
And I would say I grew up in, you might say,
Did you play stickball?
I was never into sports though all that much,
okay.
quite frankly. But people did play it.
So what did you do as a kid in Brooklyn?
You know, I grew up in a very emotional family,
uh-huh.
and I lived a very sheltered childhood.
Uh-huh.
So while the other kids would play stickball, I would just go home and watch TV. You know,
okay.
I was just like, you know, my mother didn't want me to get hurt. Mm-hmm. I had eye surgeries when I was a kid, so she was like paranoid about me getting hurt mm-hmm. by a ball or something like that. So
she was
overly protective.
Was she like one of those, what they call today, like a airplane, a hoverer?
No, I wouldn't say that because they weren't really checking my homework.
Helicopter.
As
oh, they
much.
Weren't.
Yeah, they weren't really doing that. I think, you know,
were your parents from America?
Yeah, they were first born in America.
And where was your family from?
Originally like Russian Polish border, all mm-hmm. of them. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So my parents had their own kind of stuff, their own kind of things going on. Mm-hmm. And so you know, it was a bit of a hectic upbringing, you right. might say, a little bit of a high stress upbringing, mm-hmm. and I suffered from depression as a child. Even when I was 5 years old, I remember telling my mother how depressed I felt.
So let me ask you a question here, because how depressed you felt?
Yeah.
As a 5 year old back then,
right?
Did
fearful.
You have the language that you were depressed?
Well, the thing is that my mom. Before I started school in those you know formative years, mm-hmm. I used to sit in the kitchen and listen to her talk on the phone uh-huh. to her friends. And so I picked up all of that. And then she used to take me once a week. She used to go for counseling mm-hmm. at Kings County Hospital
right.
on Clarkson Avenue. And she used to go to the psychiatric building for, mm-hmm. and I used to sit in the waiting area. Mm-hmm. And so I knew like something's going on here, you right. know, but I couldn't really put my finger on it. But I grew up in a, you know, look, you know, there are people who have worse childhoods. I'm not trying
well,
to
make Well, we don't want to compare because right. it's like, this is one of the things that we all do as human beings. We go, oh, his thing is over there is worse than mine. And then it's like, so that gives you, rather than like looking at yourself, you're looking over there and saying that person's life is worse. And it's not. It's your, because somebody's looking at your life and going, oh, thank God I don't have his life.
Right.
Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you want to be like, I always think that you have to be mindful in how you're, you know, describing that situation. So, all right. So you were depressed at five.
Yeah. And in through childhood and.
What about teenage years? Because it's
oh, even
was it
worse.
Compounded?
It was worse because you know everybody's starting to grow up, and I was a very what you call a late bloomer.
Uh-huh.
You know? Yeah.
So you did. What age did you start dating?
Oh, 18.
Oh, okay. That's not too bad.
Okay.
You know, today they're probably dating at 9.
Probably are.
They'd be married by 20. I was married by 20. So anyway. So you had a sheltered childhood. Your mother had some issues. Your parents had some issues.
Yeah.
You didn't really hang out much. You kind of stayed home and watched television.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of television,
yeah,
I imagine. What was your favorite show?
Oh, Thunderbirds. Remember the Thunderbirds from the UK?
Is that Thunderbirds?
Sherry Anderson?
Go?
Yeah.
Thunderbirds.
FAB.
Right.
For anybody who wants Captain Scarlet.
Captain Scarlet.
Remember SIG? Remember
no,
what
that's? Remember that one.
Spectrum is Green.
So you watched a lot of telly.
A lot, yeah.
So you told me earlier that you, as you grew up, you were in the music business.
Yeah, I was. Yeah.
So you were an A&R man.
Yeah, I was.
So did you find anybody that was famous?
No, but I was looking. I would go to audition night every week at CBGB's uh-huh. when we had that famous
yes.
club. And by the way, I can answer, what does CBGB stand for?
What does it stand for?
Country Bluegrass Blues.
Okay.
How do you like
Thank
that?
Thank you. Country, bluegrass, and blues.
That's right.
So,
but they turned into a punk club.
Right, because punk was it.
That was it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I went there every Sunday night for audition night for years. You
so
know,
did you
I was
see
like
anybody
trying to find.
Was...
You know, I can't say. I mean, I think the funniest thing was I saw Bon Jovi's cousin.
Uh-huh.
When,
not Bon Jovi.
Not Bon Jovi. Bon Jovi's cousin. Audition, try, you know, she was a singer.
Was this after and, Bon Jovi hit?
Oh, yeah. This,
okay,
oh, yeah,
so she was
yeah. So her name was something. What? I'm sorry if I say I can't remember her name. If she's tuned in, I am so sorry, but her name was something.
She's going to be tuned in now.
But her, the real name Bon Jovi is really Bon Jovi. So
Bon Jovi?
Bon Jovi. In fact, there's a guy who owns a recording studio who is, I believe, the uncle of John Bon Jovi, whose name is, I think he's Gary Bon Jovi, and he owns a big recording studio in Midtown
Manhattan.
Well,
I can't imagine him going, my
so
name
a lot of Bon
John
Jovi's.
Bon Jovi. No, Bon Jovi sounds great.
It's a good rock really and roll name.
So who else did you see? Did you ever see Debbie Harry?
No, you know, I really went to CBGB, mostly on audition night.
Uh-huh.
But I did see, you know, when the Talking Heads broke up,
right.
Four of them became the Heads.
Mm-hmm.
And I did see them at CBGB's. That was okay. A very famous, I think they did two nights there.
Okay.
So I did see them.
So when
but I was really into Britpop. Britpop was my thing.
Yeah, that
was
my thing. I know you're a bit of an
I was the biggest Anglophile in New York City.
Yeah, I saw every Anglophile.
I not only saw every Brit.
Is that why you wanted to be on my show? Because you're an Anglophile.
Ah, that's good. That's good. But you know, I saw practically every band from the UK, especially on their first gig mm-hmm. here in New York. I saw Blur. I saw Oasis,
okay.
Their first gig. You remember Blur,
yeah.
Right?
No.
You don't remember Blur. Pulp. You remember Pulp?
No.
Oh, you don't. Boy, I saw a lot of bands, but I could name bands. But my favorite band was Simple Minds, if
okay.
You remember Simple Minds from
yeah,
Glasgow. And, you know, U2 and okay. all of the new wave.
Right.
In fact, my first job what I'd say real job, I was helping Lena Lovitch. Do you remember Lena Lovitch?
Name sounds familiar.
She was signed to a band, to a label in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
This is, and everybody asked me, oh, Lena Lovitch, you must have worked for Stiff Records. I don't know if you remember Stiff.
No.
Stiff had Elvis Costello
yes,
and Ian Dury and the Blockheads, I believe,
yes,
were
I
on
do.
Stiff. So people say, oh, you worked for Stiff. And I go, no, I worked for a different record label a little later on.
Uh-huh. That's my signal.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering. He gave me two fingers. In my section of Brooklyn, two fingers is worse than one.
Really?
No.
Because yeah. in my section of the world, two fingers is like this, mate, you
okay.
know, rather than that.
Okay.
So... I just want to recap. So you were 5 years old, you're depressed, then you go into 18, you start dating, and then what age did you get into A&R?
Oh, in my 20s.
So you're in your 20s, you're in A&R, and you're an Anglophile, so that means you went to London quite a bit.
I did go to London. After the first, it took me a while to get the first trip,
mm-hmm.
but then after that, it was like, I was actually in the Virgin Airlines Frequent Flyer Club for a short period of time. So I must have been doing a lot.
I'll tell you a story. So when I first came here to the United States, I came to stay with my one suitcase and my $60.
Right.
60 pounds, sorry.
You're not going far with that.
I flew Virgin.
Right.
And at the time, they had...
Tell me about
the
it.
Virgin In-Flight Entertainment was a guy that walked down the aisles with a guitar.
Oh, my... Are you kidding?
No, I'm serious. It was a guitar.
Oh,
and
I thought you were going to tell me the price of your flight was like $99 or something.
No, I don't think it was very much because that was Freddie Laker.
I used to do London for $350 round trip, including
right.
the taxes and the landing fees. Can you believe that?
Yes,
today,
I can.
Today, that's the taxes.
All right. So we're going to take a break and we'll be right back. I need to get a nap.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo!
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Thank you.
So we're back on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And I have David Parker, who is the author of The More You Do, The Better You Feel, which I don't know. For me, the more I do, the better I feel. No, my coach told me to cut that crap out. Cut it down, bring it down, and be more strategic with what I'm doing.
You know, I was doing a health show at a hotel, and one of the workers walked by and saw as I was setting up. He looked at it. He wasn't from this country. He said, "The more you do, the better you feel. Is it about sex?" I said, "No, it's not." Good try, guy.
Well, yeah, but that would be good. The more you do, the better you feel. That would be sexy if it was about sex. So tell me now, what inspired you to write this book?
You know, I was, I was an Anglophile. Mm-hmm. I wound up, I was on a long vacation in London.
Mm-hmm. How long was your vacation?
A couple months.
Okay.
And I met a woman and we got married.
So you met a woman, and how long after did you get married?
6 weeks.
Okay, 6 weeks. I have a friend that tops that. She met her husband, and in 4 weeks, she got married. And she's still married to now. And good. She's been married a number of years now. Mm. I met my husband, and I was married, let's just say 4 months, total of 6 months. Mm. And we were married for 12 years.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know that I was married. I guess it's not something that I really talk about because I'm complete with it. You know?
Sure.
So it's not something that I go, "Oh, that bastard." No, he wasn't. I'm just done. No. Right. So go ahead. So you were married after 6 weeks.
So, well,
so it must have been really hot. Must have been like, the more you do, the better you feel.
Well, I really wanted to live in London.
Oh, okay.
And she had her reasons for wanting to marry someone.
Uh-huh.
Well, you don't want to go into that. It's something that
That's probably the juicy stuff.
It's something I learned. Now, actually, it's very, very sad and depressing. And
okay.
It's something I only learned at the very end of the marriage when her mother leaked it out. And I was like, what?
That she wanted to marry somebody that was...
Well, she had a situation and she wanted to be married.
Okay.
So,
would you recommend somebody meeting people and getting married after 6 months? I mean, 6 weeks?
No.
Why? Why not?
For a person when in a different country?
Mm-hmm.
No. I think like maybe in your own country, but I think that it was part of it was on my own emotional situation, mm-hmm. like, you know, oh, it's got to work out. So, yeah, let's do it.
It's got to work out because you want to be in Britain.
Yeah. But I also thought that she loved me and she didn't.
Okay.
So it's a whole heartbreaking thing. I thought I did. I did.
Okay.
But I really say honestly, I thought I did because I wasn't given the real story about her situation and why she was marrying me. If she had been honest from the beginning, I have to ask myself,
but it wouldn't have,
what would I have done?
Love is love, right? I mean, even if she'd have been honest, if you loved her, you loved her. Then logic would have said, oh, this is not going to work. But if you loved her, you loved her.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah,
I met my husband here. I was on vacation and we was married in 6 months. I came and lived here.
I can't really say honestly, did I marry her because I wanted to be in England or did I marry her because I wanted to be with her? It's very difficult. I can't answer it.
So if you could have married her and be in England and not be with her, would you have married her?
I don't know. I can't even comprehend the question.
So let's just move on.
Yeah.
Okay. So you married her. It didn't work out. And then?
And I went into a tailspin. A depression of all depressions.
So basically shit hit the fan.
I was in a very, very bad state, and a lot of people were worried about me.
Okay, so tell us the story, because that's the inspiration for the book.
Yeah,
right?
Well, what happened was I recalled the advice that a friend had once given me.
Mm-hmm.
He said, everywhere you go, carry a notebook with you,
mm-hmm.
and no matter how bad your feelings are,
mm-hmm.
write them down, because you'll diffuse them.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't really believe it. I didn't do it at the time. He had told me this years ago back in Brooklyn,
mm-hmm.
but I remembered it in London. I got a notebook. I started writing, you know, day and date,
mm-hmm.
and how I was feeling. And I found it helped. It really helped to kind of diffuse the feelings and take the energy away. And I needed that. I needed to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was close to the end.
So how many of these books, can you show them the book?
This?
Is this the same book, the same
no.
type of book that you've
Oh,
been,
yeah.
How many of these books do you have, and how long did this process, how long have you been doing this process?
Well, I started writing back then. This was around 2003 or 2004, I would say.
Right.
And so the thing was, as the book grew and grew and grew,
the book grew out of these writings.
Yeah, but I didn't write the book. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I didn't write my feelings down with any intention of writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
The book is a completely different thing. What happened was I started to use the margins to write to-do notes and reminders because I had this book in my back pocket all the time, this notebook. So I started, buy groceries or do this, do that, buy concert tickets, whatever. And as it went on and on, page after page, I started to do things like, okay, today is Tuesday. So let's see how I was feeling last Tuesday or the Tuesday before that. And as I would look, I would say, I'd bump into these reminders and I'd say, golly, a nice word for,
oh, shit.
Yeah, shit. Why the hell didn't I do that?
Right.
But did I do it the second time I saw it, or the third, or the fourth? No.
Mm-hmm.
And as my feelings grew and grew in the book, and I'd look back on the pages, filling up a book and getting a new book, I'd look back on the pages and I'd not only see these undealt with tasks, I would notice that every time I saw them, my feelings would go like to the basement, elevator to the basement. And I'd feel I'd feel horrible. And then I'd say, what is it with these undone tasks and why are they making me feel depressed?
Right.
And then I realized that it was really coming out of this. I had never really learned how to take proper care of myself.
Okay.
And that's part of the reason why I look back on moving to London as almost like a folly, because I had a very hard time taking care of myself back in the States before.
Mm-hmm.
Before I moved to England. So right. It was a daunting task. But that aside...
Now you got me all curious. So if you were to go through that book, how long does an average book last for you?
You mean one of these notebooks?
I'm just going to call it.
Maybe about a year.
Oh, this book lasts a year?
Yeah. So I don't write in it every day. But I used to write furiously back in the early days.
Right.
I was writing all the time. I was I would have written in the shower if I
got a waterproof book.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Right. So this book is a year old.
This one is about a year old. Yeah.
Right.
This is probably
So
about
if
a
you
year
were
old.
So this you've had this,
this
book since last year.
Yeah, this started in September
and
of
he writes
2017.
Really
yeah.
So
This is a relatively new book.
And when did this
September 2017.
So is there anything
more than a year, actually.
Okay. Is there anything in that book that you could share that where you were back then?
Well, I've changed a lot.
Okay. So could you read that first entry? Or would you?
Well, I don't know. I didn't really look at it. And a lot of it is super personal. So I don't really.
Could you read one thing? Because you are sharing stuff with people, and there might be somebody on here that could actually use it. And also, there are things that you're experiencing that they're experiencing as well.
Well, let's see.
Let's see. Do a little tiny one.
Monday, October 16th, 2017. In a way, my procrastination is like I'm acting like a child who's holding his breath.
Okay.
I wrote that.
Okay.
Yeah, because I was...
And what was that like for you? Do you remember that time? You're acting like a child that's holding
his
breath.
Well, I can't...
Were you having a tantrum?
I can't remember... I'm famous for not having the best memory in the world, I'll tell you the truth. But I can say from reading that, that I remember how I was feeling, not on the day, not on the exact day, but I remember why I wrote it, because I was saying to myself, procrastination is really a child who's why does a child hold their breath? They want mommy to do something for them, and mommy's saying no, and the child can't do it for themselves. And so what I'm saying is, procrastination is like you're waiting for it. I wish it could just be done. Can I just go like that and my apartment is clean and everything? And it doesn't work that way.
Well, I think we all do that. I used to do this thing I used to pretend I dream of Jeannie. And I would go like this.
Oh, yeah?
I would go like this.
Yeah.
But I knew I was just kidding.
Right.
I mean, it wasn't serious, but like I would do that.
Right.
Like, or wrinkle my nose like she did and hope that,
I think that was Bewitched.
Yeah. Well, one of those things, right?
That's okay. Oh,
you the TV person.
Yeah, that's right.
So I would do that. But I knew nothing was going to happen. But it was just a game I played with myself. Right. I mean, I think we all sort of play silly games with ourselves.
But you eventually got into action and took care of what you needed to do. And I didn't.
I didn't get into action. So So what I do is, I make lists.
Right, which is good, you know?
And I have a level of toleration. I know what I can tolerate and what I can't tolerate.
Yeah, but you got it all together, girl.
Right?
You know,
no, I don't have it together.
I think you do.
Trust me on that.
You got it better than me. And, you know, I always say to people, when people I do the health shows, and they say, you know, I make lists, but I don't take care of what I need to do.
I make a list of what I need to do. So clean off my desk, clean out the refrigerator, clean the countertop, mop the floor. I make a list.
Right.
Right. And then I go through and check off each of those things.
Right.
And then at the end of the, when I've gotten to the point where everything is done, it's like,
it's good.
I have to do the list, though. Right. Otherwise, I will get.
Yeah, you get overwhelmed.
I will get distracted and do something else.
Right.
You know, I'll get an idea.
And I'm the same way, except what I came up for me was what I call the Jot method. And this is just for me. I didn't even call it the Jot method. I called it the Jot method, which means J-O-T, just one task.
Right.
And I only did that for the book. You know, the book was an afterthought. After a year of doing this technique of writing of just one task, because I had to teach myself, like, David, even if you write two things on a to-do list, you're suddenly going to start panting and going like, oh, my God, I don't know what to do first. I'm just going to put the TV on for 5 minutes because I want to see what's on later, and then I promise I'll shut it, and I didn't.
Right.
Because I'd overwhelm. I was too sensitive to all of these things. So the So what happened is, after a year of doing the Jot method, I started to see that I started to feel better about myself because I'd write down a task. I didn't distract myself. I forced myself, like, write it down, do it, and then put a line through it so that you see, like, good, David, you did it. It
was almost
like, exactly. I tell people, it's almost like training a dog. I say, good, David, you did it. And then what do? You write the next one task. You fight the resistance.
So how long does it take for you to do one task?
It depends on the task. But what I also taught myself to do is write down simple tasks. Like in the morning, I'll start doing light housework, like dusting or mopping, just to get the engine going. You know, do something simple and then work up. But even if I do something that's complex, I do one task at a time.
So how did you write this book? It's got, like, let's
it took
how many
me
pages?
7 years.
7 years.
To write that book. And people keep asking me, when are you going to write your second book? And I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to write
a
second
writer
book.
On,
this
had,
is hard work.
I had a writer on the show 2 weeks ago.
Right.
2 weeks ago? Or was it last week? I can't remember. Anyway, she was on the show. And she says that it doesn't take 7 years to write a book.
Okay, did for me.
She goes, yeah, because you were far arsing around, she would say.
No,
you know what I mean?
I had to learn. I could write a shopping list and go to the supermarket. I could deal with that. But writing
So if you wrote
book,
a shopping list and went to the supermarket, would you go to the supermarket and get the things on the list, or would you get overwhelmed?
No, that's a very good question. I was used to shopping lists. I think that that's a category in and of itself.
Okay.
That if I said milk and eggs, I didn't have to make separate trips to the store and come back and say, like, okay, now I'm going to go for eggs.
So was it ever like that, where you would write something down and you have to do several trips because you didn't get it done?
No.
Okay, so we're going to take a break and we're going to come right back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you like comic books and movies? How about TV and pop culture? Then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Michael Dolce, host of Secrets of the Sire. Joined every week by my co-host, Hassan, Lord of the Radio Godwin, together we have over 15 years' experience creating graphic novels, screenplays, and more. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
And we're back on Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way. And look, my face is getting smaller. It's been sucked up by this thing. So we're back on the show with David Parker. The more you do, the better you feel. And so David is talking about depression and procrastination. And do you think you've got it down to a science now in terms of not procrastinating?
You know, I would say that even to this day, every day is a challenge.
Okay.
But I win.
Is it like alcoholism?
I would say so.
Every day.
Every day, yeah. It's
every day without a drink, you're winning.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never really thought about it that way, but that's a good way. That's a good analogy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, there are days that I wake up and I still struggle a little bit with depression, and I say, oh, I don't feel like doing anything today. And then I say, David, consequences.
But what would happen if you actually gave yourself permission to not do something that day?
I can.
Yeah. What is that like? What is it? I give myself permission to not do something.
Right. Because you need to take a day.
It's not a matter of taking a day. It's like I give myself permission to not do something, but then I give myself a day to get it done.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good question because it is exactly. That's right. I was going to say you're you and I'm me.
Mm-hmm.
Now for me, if I feel that proper action produces good feelings in me. So if I lay around the house all day and I don't do much, I have a very big tendency to feel sorry for myself automatically, to slip into depression.
So you have guilt.
And they have guilt and beating myself up. I've had therapists say, David, you're very hard on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, if I'm not hard on myself, who will be? You know?
Well, could you be, I mean, I'm not telling you, but I think that being hard on oneself does not even make a difference. It doesn't work because you're accustomed to it, right?
Right.
You're accustomed to being hard on yourself.
Right.
But what if you just be a little bit more compassionate with yourself and just take on being responsible?
That's a very, you know, your questions are, this is one of you're one of the more intelligent people who've ever interviewed me.
Because, tell that to my teachers that I went to school with.
Well, I'm telling you, because you're asking like very, very interesting questions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so and the answer that I would say is this: even though I've written this book, right? Like I'm 59 years old right now. 15 years ago, I was at the end of my rope, literally in London, and I've come a long way.
So would you?
But I'm
when you
still,
say end of your rope, would you? Were you going to top out?
Oh yeah.
You going to take a dirt nap?
So yeah, it's a very sensitive subject for me.
Got it.
So I don't
but
really make
you're
jokes
back.
About it.
You're back.
I have my problems, but you know what? I would say that I was in my. In my 40s and 50s, and so there's a lot of baggage. There's a lot. I am far from perfect.
No,
and
but
so,
you are. But
and
you
so
are perfect.
I'm still.
You're perfect inside of your imperfections.
Right. Okay.
Let me ask you another question. Right.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Right.
Right.
So you wrote this book.
Right.
You're dealing with this situation, the depression and the procrastination.
And if I could point out also on the back cover, I was, and I don't know if people could see here, but I was a human ostrich.
Okay.
And that's what I call people like me, who I would constantly put my head in the sand and say, I don't want to deal with this.
Okay,
this is too hard. I can't deal with it.
I got it.
Yeah.
So given that you have written this book, you've got your book that you take your daily notes and things like that.
Right.
Right. What would life look like? What would your life look like if you really went full hog on yourself and really dealt with all of the things that are sensitive subjects for you and just went hard, right? And just said, you know what? I'm here to make a difference in my life, and making a difference in my life will make a difference in the people that pick up my book. which could actually be your second book, right?
Well, actually, I have been, you see, it's,
what
it's
would
not
your
that...
So let me finish. Yeah. What would your life look like?
Well, I don't think, okay, with all due respect, I don't think that that's realistic.
Why'd you say that?
Why do I say that? Because I have a lot of baggage.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah. I got you have a lot of baggage. Yeah. We all have baggage, right?
Right.
But what if you, I'm just being devil's advocate here and really just like stretching out, right? Because you really do want to make a difference. You, you know, even through the difficulty, you wrote this book.
Right.
It wasn't an easy job, right? Am I right?
Right.
It took something for you to do this, right?
Yeah.
Every day, getting up, writing this book. Okay. All right. So it's not something you could do.
Yeah. I think that, you know, if I write a second book, which I might like to do, but it's so much work just doing one, I'm working right now on pessimism. Okay. My biggest problem right now is pessimism. I'm talking about taking negativity and saying negativity is over here. This is pessimism. In other words, like it's not, is the glass half empty or is the glass half full? To me, it's like, this is a glass. He likes that. The producer liked that one. Mm-hmm. But that really is how I am. It's like negativity on steroids, you know. It's like,
so
I,
that your negativity.
Yeah.
On
so I'm okay. still. That's why I say I'm still carrying like this.
Wow, isn't
this,
that great? Because
baggage,
my,
you know.
I hear you.
And
what
so
you
it's. I think it's monumental, and I'm like saying, like I'm trying not to be egotistical when I say this. I think it's monumental that I, a procrastinator, wrote a 248-page book that has some really wonderful reviews on Amazon and. I don't know if you know Brian Tracy. He wrote the book Eat That Frog. He gave me a glowing endorsement, which is on the back of the book. And by the way, if I may say, I invite everybody to please visit my website, davidparkerauthor.com.
Yeah, but so let me ask you a question. Why would they visit your website?
To find out more about the relationship between, if people are identifying, if somebody's looking at this right now and they're saying procrastination and depression, just pull your socks up, put your shoes on and get out of the house and do. You're not, this book is not for you. This book is not for everyone. This book is for people
so I'm gonna
who
ask
will
you
ID
to
with
pull,
this.
I'm going to give you your book and I'm going to ask you to pull a page and just pull a page.
Pull a page. And dealing with setbacks.
Okay, go ahead.
Dealing with setbacks. You want me to read? Yeah, no one sets out to become a habitual procrastinator. Instead, we develop procrastination as a method of coping with life's obligations. It might not be the best way of dealing with things, but for better or worse, it allows us to continue functioning. In a sense, habitual procrastination is akin to alcoholism because while no one ever sets out to become a problem drinker or to develop a drinking habit, it happens because no matter the downfall, drinking offers some degree of comfort, relief, and escape from life's obligations.
And what does procrastination?
That was amazing that I just pulled that out. That was, we talked about that before. Yeah.
So what,
not bad, huh?
What does that provide? What does procrastination provide for you?
Relief.
Relief from what?
Relief from everything. It's like the perfect drug. You know, life is house cleaning is too difficult.
Get a cleaning lady.
Yeah, but we don't want to do that. We want to learn to take responsibility for ourselves. We want to make responsibility
we want
to make responsibility into responsibility. Okay. It's not about hiring a cleaning lady. It's about learning how to do it yourself.
So let me say this to you.
Yeah.
What if cleaning is just not your thing, but you have the ability to make the money to pay the cleaning lady? That's a responsibility.
Right.
Right? Or it's either you're going to sit in shit.
Right.
Or...
For a person who has the money, yeah. But what about when you do your taxes not only late, but you're doing them on a second extension? And then after you do your taxes, after you finally do it, you look at it and you say, what was the big deal? Why didn't I just take care of it? Okay. And it's this beating
on
yourself.
I'm going to say that... As a personal life coach that have people come to me who want to do things, who are really committed to living their life and living it fully in a way and getting out of their way,
right?
I'm getting the sense that you are holding on to limiting beliefs about yourself that you're not willing to give up. That's how it occurs to me. I'm not saying it's the truth.
Right, because it's not.
Right?
No.
But that's how it I just said to you.
I think you deal with more successful people.
No, I deal with all kinds of people, right?
Right.
But I'm going to say that, like, if you want a clean apartment, you can get a cleaning lady. If you, you don't have to do it.
Right.
You can pay somebody to do it. And what you have to do is create the money to get that done.
I don't think we're talking about the same thing, though. Talking about when a person is mired in depression and they can't get out of bed, and then when they do, instead of taking care of what's getting them depressed, like their messy apartment, instead of dealing with it, they put the TV on.
I'm asking them to, you can still put the TV on and just pay the cleaning lady to do it.
Right.
I'm just, you know, saying.
Right. You could, but then what about your taxes? And then what about, you know, like I actually, and I'm not proud to say this, but I ran out of clean laundry at times.
I've run out of clean laundry where I've just bought 30 pairs of underwear.
Right. Okay. So right.
And then you bag them all up and you send them to the laundry because you go online. You type in Bubble Works, and you type in pickup,
and you put
it outside the front door, and they pick it up, and you drop it off.
I'm talking about when you run out of clean underwear, and you have to like sort through your bag and find the cleanest thing that is available.
I think
and
a
put
lot
it
of
on,
people do that.
You know, which I think, which is a sign of how bad my procrastination really was. You know, in fact, I have a part in the book called "Science Experiments in the Kitchen," which is a part where. You like that, hey?
You start to grow fungus?
What was going on was I had every utensil, every plate, every cup in the sink. Sink was filled with water. I came home on a cold November night. This is in the book. I looked at that mess, and I put my coat back on, went to the 7-Eleven, and bought paper plates, plastic forks and knives, and styrofoam cups instead of dealing with the mess. The next night, I bought long, you know, those long kitchen gloves, the ones that come up to here, and I bought scouring powder, and and I had to, because I had stuff growing on the dishes.
Right. Okay.
So it was, this is how bad I was. You know, I don't think your clients are quite there.
No, my client's not quite there.
Yeah.
That was a procrastinator.
Right.
And he actually lived in London.
Yeah.
And we used to do Skype calls.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I would actually do with him is to show me a part of the apartment.
Right.
And he would show me that part, show me another part of the apartment. I said, which part are you going to choose to work on?
Right.
And he would choose a part and he would work on it. And we did over a period of time.
That's very good.
We did this over a period of time until he cleaned up his apartment.
Right.
When he cleaned up, because he actually wanted to get a new apartment, bigger apartment, because he was having his kids.
Right.
But when we actually got to the point where we cleaned up every single bit of that apartment, he got an opportunity and moved into a bigger apartment.
Okay.
Right? But what I'm saying is, you're saying about what you were, what you did, what you didn't do. But what you're saying is that your situation is so bad and so different, right, that... I don't understand it, but I'm just saying little bits at a time, little structures. Yeah, I got it. Little structures can make a difference.
Right.
But it's like looking at the whole, not just saying, oh, this part is very sensitive. That part is very sensitive. And then because it's still for me, what I'm hearing is certain parts of it are still sensitive because you haven't dealt with it.
Yeah.
Right. And if you deal with it.
Right.
Because
but if you, on the other hand, if you constantly feel like, oh my God, I can't deal with it because I'm so, and I didn't have a coach or anything. Like, you know what I mean? I mean, if you say about this gentleman in London, what about him if he didn't have a coach? Would he change? I mean, I think
he took responsibility and he got himself a coach.
Right.
And that's how he was able to transform his situation.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
And we're back with David Parker. The more you do, the better you feel.
I would just like to say, if anybody out there is IDing with the book, you know, I am more than happy to raffle away two copies of my book to the first two people who give really good questions on the chatback feature here. So if you type in a really good question, one each, you can have a copy of my book. The winners are my decision. So you got to be quick. We only have about 14 minutes left. But if you type in your question about procrastination and depression, if I can answer it, if I can help you, or if there's anything you'd like to know, I will autograph a copy and send it off to you this week.
So, Catherine, if you're on the line and you have a question, Olga, Dale, if you have a question that you would like to, let's see who's on the bottom here. Derek Wilkshire. Derek, if you have a question that you would like to ask David Parker about procrastination
and
or if even you, depression.
And if you'd like more information on the book, please visit my website, davidparkerauthor.com, or check me out on Amazon.
Right.
Thank you.
So, have a question? You get a free book. He will mail it to you.
Because, I will, and I will autograph
it. Because you know what? I'll give myself permission to procrastinate and not mail it to you.
That's cool. You got a hand slap for that one. There you go. That's a New York hand slap, by the way. That's pretty darn good. I like that. That was a real New York hand slap, you know? You are no longer a visitor. You are
God,
official.
A visitor. I've been here. You know where I've been procrastinating?
Where?
In doing my citizenship.
Oh, do it.
Yeah, so this year, that procrastination comes to an end. I'm actually going to apply for it.
Cool, very
and
good.
And the reason, one of the reasons I hadn't applied for it is because I was like, I don't have to.
No,
passport.
Get it.
Yeah, I'm going to get it.
Dual citizenship,
you know,
that's cool.
I'm not going back to England. I don't even need
right.
dual. I'm not going
but
back
you,
to England.
You'll have
I,
it.
I love
it's
it
cool.
here. It's So what would you like to, what else would you like to share?
Let's
see what else we got here.
You know what I'd like to share is, you know, how difficult a problem this has been for me, the procrastination, overcoming it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, in fact, it's funny, when I was just pulling, you know, sometimes people, when I do selling events, people say, what makes your book different from all others? And you know, the first thing I show them is the chapter dealing with setbacks, because how many times, I don't know if you've ever bought a self-help book, and you get to the end of it, and it says, well, congratulations, you've now overcome your problem. And you're like, really? Like, what page did that miracle happen on? That's why I say this is procrastination. This is as hard, you know, you said it's as hard as, it sounds like it's as hard as quitting drinking. I've said to people, I think it's as hard as stopping cigarettes, because it's like, you know, and you know what, like I've stopped smoking 8 years now, and I'll tell you, 2 years ago I was walking down a street in Brooklyn and some guy was lit up Marlboro Lights, and I was like, oh god I want one so bad. And for a year I wanted a cigarette so bad, and I fought it every damn day. I'm not having a cigarette. And you know, and I've stayed on that course. Overcoming procrastination has not been a walk in the park. It's been really difficult, and I practice the JOT method every single day, even up to now.
Great. So I like the quite a few report that they daydream excessively.
Yeah.
Okay. Talk to me about that, because I think daydreaming is a wonderful opportunity.
It is a wonderful thing, except when you do it like so much that you're not taking care of it. You know, if you take care of your home and you pay your bills on time and everything is cool, daydream to your heart's content. But if you're like sitting in your chair going like, well, and you're dreaming up kind of stuff. Yeah.
Is that how you did it?
Oh, yeah. Or watching television. So I watch television like amazing amounts of time wasted. And then taking naps. Oh, my God. I call it in my book. I used to take a snooze cruise every now and then because I was avoiding life. I think your producer here really likes. He said during the break I should do stand up. I don't know, but
okay. So tell me about what's your average day to day. So how do you what's your average day? What do you do when you wake up in the morning?
You know what I do in the morning now is I force myself out of the bed. There's no oversleeping.
So what's your wake up time?
My wake up time is usually about 7 in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah, so and I take care of my stuff.
Do you make your bed every day?
Absolutely.
Okay, you say that you say that adamantly.
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Oh, yeah.
I make my bed.
It's a really good
point. I just read an article where it says that people that don't make their bed every day have less things crawling around in their beds than people that do. I don't understand what that's about, but, you know, I can see how...
I would say there's a mental...
The air, rather than getting up, covering up, and, you know, didn't give the bed time to cool down.
So it breeds fungus.
Go ahead. I'm just making that up.
For me, there's a mental difference between when that bed is made, I say, like, okay, I'm taking... See, this is all about me taking better care of myself.
Right.
So making the bed, mopping... keeping, you know, taking dust down, you know, dusting.
So you do this every day.
I cannot go to bed at night if there are any dishes or anything in the sink.
Okay.
The sink must be, it's almost become like.
Do you not have a dishwasher?
No, I am the dishwasher. Oh.
Let me ask you a question. What's it like procrastinating, depression, and dating?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that, and I don't know if I've ever thought about it. But I will say this, you know what? There were times when I had to make my apartment, this is before I even moved to England or anything, I had to make my apartment clean for a guest, for a girl, you know, a woman. And I would say to myself afterwards, why don't I do it for myself? So why do I only do it when I'm having a guest over? And I would beat myself up over that.
You love beating yourself. I'm going to buy you a belt.
And now what I say to people, because I've had people say the same thing when I've been selling the book live, and they say, if my parents are coming over or somebody is coming over, I clean the house for them. And I say, you know what? Have guests over. If this works for you, have guests over more often. If that's what works for you,
what is procrastination like in your dating life? Do you make a date or do you procrastinate making a date? Are you an online dater and you never actually meet the person because you're procrastinating whether you should meet the person or not? What's that like? What is it like for you in the world of dating?
That's interesting. No, I don't have any problems when it comes to dating. No, if I meet a woman, and just the other night I handed a woman my business card. She said, oh, I'm going to call you. And she hasn't. So I'm like, what the hell is going on?
But what did you, that's did you life. Handle your business card?
She's procrastinating.
Did you yeah, she saw it. Did you handle your business card to do business or did you say,
No, first I gave her my bookmark. I said, here, I was just chatting with her. Here, have a bookmark. She looked at it. She goes, oh my God, this is all me. She looks at my bookmark. Here, folks, have a bookmark. So she looks at
I met you and you were trying to rap to me and you gave me a bookmark. I tell you to bite me.
And she looked at it and she said, oh my God, this is me. And I said, do you suffer with procrastination and depression?
Oh.
She said, yes. I said, are you single? She goes, yes. I said, here, have my business card. She goes, I'll call you. Florence.
Is this supposed to be a date, you and Florence?
Yeah.
Stay away from her.
Why?
Because she's a procrastinator.
No, I'll help her out.
Oh, two people. You're dealing with your stuff. She's dealing with her stuff.
Why not?
And then you come.
Why not?
Well, maybe you won't be procrastinating in the bedroom.
I hope not.
Maybe you'll be sitting about it, thinking about it. Maybe I should, maybe I shouldn't. Maybe I should.
You know, I married one woman after 6 weeks of knowing her, so I got to slow down a little bit. You know? Yeah.
You're so funny. So, careful. David, I yeah. want to say thank you for so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And, thank you for your
thank generosity you for having me.
Of spirit.
Cool.
Because I know I got you. A little hard there.
Oh,
and is there anything that you'd like, give me your email address that you'd like to
thank you. It's info at David Parker Author. If you'd like to shoot me an email, please do. If you have any questions, please do. Again, it's info at David Parker Author, or check out my website, davidparkerauthor.com. I'd love to hear from you and check out the website.
Awesome. And this is Noreen Sumter saying goodnight on Beyond Potential. Live life your way. And you guys, what came first, the chicken or the egg, the procrastination or the depression?
And the answer is, it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Just do the next step.
Take an action.
That's right.
All right. See you next week. Bye.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Do you like comic books and movies? How about TV and pop culture? Then you've come to the right place. Hi, I'm Michael Dolce, host of Secrets of the Sire. Joined every week by my co-host, Hassan, Lord of the Radio, Godwin. Together, we have over 15 years' experience creating graphic novels, screenplays, and more. Join us as we bring you the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. Wednesday nights, 8 p.m. Eastern, talkradio.nyc.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us, right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.